Welcome, Tale Tellers. Today, I have an epic for you. It's a creepypasta called The Ditch. I promise you, this is full-on intense. And if you're not a fan of gross stuff, listen to another episode. If you are, get ready to have your skin crawling by the end of it. Before we launch into our fantastic episode, I'm calling it early, time to talk about fantastic people. Troy Shaw, a fan like no other, mate. Thank you for your constant support and attention to detail. Cheers, mate. Arkan brother, you superstar, you. I have another fantastic brain-splosion story from him involving the Tale Teller. And once my voice is better and I'm not spluttering everywhere, I can do it justice. So thanks, buddy. Sin, for the constant likes she sends my way, thank you. Quasarbolt, thank you for the repost, you superstar. And a new podcast, Awesome Ty is running for mayor. Now, this surprised me, so I thought I'd read the first sentence from his podcast channel. Hey, what's up? My name is Ty. I'm a struggling musician who is running for mayor of a small town in California. I have absolutely no background in politics, nor any relevant experience in local government. Brilliant. Thanks, mate, for the follow. Absolute gold. See, this is why I love podcasting. Oh, and you know what? Today I'm shouting out to Stony Creek, Canada, who are just destroying it for the numbers of listens, with Fishers, Indiana close behind. Thank you guys and gals. Alright, turn the lights off, the sound up, and get ready for a creepy pasta like no other. And I mean it. The Ditch by Samuel Pomerantz. The first thing that Jeff noticed when he opened his eyes was that he was completely immobile from the neck down. Next came the realization that it was now early in the daytime. The last thing he remembered was running alongside the Maryland stretch of Route 50 between Salisbury and Avondale at nighttime. Now it was day. Jeff tried to gather his whereabouts. By maneuvering his neck around, he could see that his body was lying at the base of some sort of deep depression. A ditch alongside the highway. A steep ledge on the side of the ditch he happened to be upon rose at an almost vertical angle for about 8 feet, then gradually sloped another 10 towards the pavement and guardrail. In front of him, the ditch had a small slope no more than 5 feet, leading up to some marsh grass and a dense gathering of trees that lined the road for about 10 miles. Once all of this had been ascertained, Jeff tilted his head forward, pressing his chin uncomfortably into his chest. He wanted to see why he couldn't move. Jeffrey Callister, former wide receiver for Kent Island High School, the college track star who could run a 5-minute mile no sweat, even a decade hence, was now a mangled, grotesque caricature of his former self. It looked like everything from the torso down had been jammed through a meat grinder. His legs were broken in at least 20 different places. The bottom portion of his abdomen was sliced open and trailing about 10 feet or so from his innards stretched a line of intestine looking like a pale snake in the grass. Dried blood had covered his clothes and the surrounding space caking him in a sticky film of goo. Jeff began to scream. He did not relent for a good 5 minutes. He cried for help, cried from confusion, cried in pain, cried. What was he doing here? How did he end up in this situation? He forced himself to try and recall the events of the previous evening. Jeff recalled his car running out of gas. In his hurry, he had forgotten to refill it, and the tank was already low when he was on his way home. He was running, though. Why had that been? Was there somewhere he desperately needed to be? Michaela. He was trying to get to her before it was too late. So, he was running, and then the next thing he knew, everything grew bright. Then he had woken up in the ditch. From the looks of things and where he was, he must have been hit by a car. But why hadn't the driver stopped? Or perhaps, they had gone to get help. No, that wasn't it. They wouldn't have abandoned him here like this. They would have called 911 or flagged the car down for help or something. They would have called 911 or flagged a car down for help or something. And why was it daytime? Three words simultaneously struck him that caused a surge of panic throughout what was left of his body. Hit and run. He kept trying to shake the words out of his mind. He didn't want it to be so. Yet, try as he might, he could not deny that this had to be the scenario. He had been struck by a speeding car that evening while running down the highway to find a gas station. The car must have sent him flying through the air into the ditch where he had spent the night, miraculously alive after the ordeal. Had he only been on the opposite side of the guardrail, or had he only filled up his gas tank before going home? Had he only not gone to work in the first place and stayed with her? Jeff realized that what-if scenarios weren't going to change his present state. He had to figure a way out of his predicament. His cell phone was in his left pocket. If it wasn't smashed, he might be able to call for help. By forcing his concentration upon his left arm, he tried in vain to get the slightest movement from his hand. He couldn't understand why it wouldn't move. It wasn't until he looked at his arm that he realized it was bent so bad in every which direction that it far more resembled a question mark than it did an appendage. Not that it really mattered. He had come to the conclusion that he was, in all likelihood, completely paralyzed, save his head and neck. He was thankful that he could at least move these about. Jeff recalled an episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents in which a paralyzed man couldn't move any part of his body and was mistaken for being dead. At least this way, he could scream and call for help. But it was early in the morning, probably no later than 7 a.m. In the 10 minutes that he'd been awake, he hadn't heard a single car pass by. Soon, however, he knew that cars would be roaring their way to work. He'd just have to stay conscious long enough to listen for them. Jeff wished that he could see them, but the steep ledge of the ditch he had come to rest in would not permit it. Instead, he lay in a deep shadow that obscured his vision of anything above the ditch. A rumble could suddenly be discerned. It was distant, yet growing intensely as it approached. There was no mistaking it. It was probably a pickup truck on its way to Avondale. A smile crossed Jeff's face. Any second now, he'd hear the brakes squeal, the thumping of footsteps, and a friendly, concerned voice that would be his salvation. The rumbling of the pickup grew nearer and louder. Jeff began to imagine what the driver looked like. Closer it grew, not 100 feet off. He bet that the truck would be green for some reason, his favorite color. He found the tear to be streaming down his neck, so excited was he. The truck continued on, without stopping. Jeff's jovial attitude disappeared back into the fear and tormented cloud that had been over him since he had awoken. Why hadn't the truck stopped? Why hadn't they helped him? "Hey!" he screamed as loud as he could, shocked at the croak that had escaped his lips. He was severely dehydrated and exhausted. Jeff persevered. "Come back! Please! Down here! I need help! I'm hurt bad! I'm hurt real bad!" He continued to scream for help long after the truck was gone. Eventually, another rumble could be heard coming down the road. Two cars. This time, he was sure he'd be helped. This time, he was sure he'd be seen and helped out by one of them, if not both. He waited expectantly, yelling, "Hey!" over and over again, hoping that they'd hear him. Like the last time, they continued on without stopping to check on the shattered man lying in the ditch. Jeff racked his brain at what was going on. Why wasn't anyone stopping to help him? When one sees someone that's been hurt real bad lying on the side of the road, typically at least one person is gonna stop and call for help. Then, it dawned on him. When he had been in high school, Jeff had done a show for the theater department. It wasn't anything particularly good, he thought, but he enjoyed the camaraderie of the theater students. He recalled one of the rehearsals during which he had been standing backstage in full view of the audience section. The stage manager, a little snot named Steve, had hissed him to get back and out of view. "If you can see the audience can see you." Steve's words were ringing through Jeff's head at this moment. He could not see the vehicles on the road, or the road itself. Therefore, the vehicles could not see him deep down in the ditch. Jeff began to panic. If the vehicles couldn't see him, how would they be able to stop and get him out of here to a hospital? For the next hour or so, perhaps even several, Jeff screamed his head off at each passing car. It wasn't long before the rush of vehicles came heading to work, yet not one of them could hear the poor man in the ditch, shrieking desperately for help against the roaring of rush hour traffic. Jeff prayed for an accident that would cause the traffic to slow up just a little bit, long enough so that he would be heard during the standstill. No such luck appeared for him, and he found himself lying in the ditch, unable to do a thing but yell. After hours of such raucous activity, he found his voice growing fainter and fainter. He hadn't the energy. Consciousness was fading from him. He imagined his larynx had been reduced to ribbons by now. So hoarse were his cries and pleas for assistance. Soon, the noonday sun appeared over the lip of the ditch, almost directly over his face. At first, he had welcomed the heat, for he was rapidly growing colder due to the blood loss he had endured. It didn't take long, though, before he started to see spots blurring his vision and was forced to close his eyes. He did not want to do this, however. He feared he would fall asleep. And if this were to happen, he was not entirely sure that he would be able to wake up. A cold sweat began to break out across his brow. He itched for the opportunity to wipe his forearm across his head to clear the uncomfortable beads from his face. But he knew this was quite impossible. Instead, he attempted to distract himself from everything by thinking about something else. Yet, the only thing he could find himself thinking of at this moment, other than his battered condition, was Michaela McGinnis. She had an affair with him for nearly a year. She was married 4 years to some guy named Scott. Despite the nature of the situation, Jeff had always seen their relationship as stable. Never did a bit of guilt creep up into his mind. Michaela insisted that she didn't love Scott anymore, and any day now, she would leave him for Jeff. Jeff liked her. No. Ass over heels loved her. But Scott got a promotion, and they were moving from Avondale to some place up in New York. It wasn't until yesterday, though, she told him that they'd be permanently leaving, and the affair was over. Jeff had found himself in such a state of shock at such a sudden bombshell that all he could do was leave her house and go to work. He was stupid enough to turn off his phone for the day and just leave. Why hadn't he stayed home? Why hadn't he tried to talk things out with her? Jeff intensely loved Michaela. Had he stayed with her yesterday, he would have shown the wedding ring he'd selected to give to her when she decided to leave Scott. He didn't want to lose her, but he was so dumbfounded by her revelation that he knew that if he did not want to hurt her or himself, he had to be out of and away from that house. As soon as he clocked out, he received a text from Michaela. They were leaving that night. Jeff tore his way down Route 50 towards Avondale. A drive that is typically 20 minutes was increased to 2 hours when he ran out of gas. It was then he had taken off running, desperate for a gas station so he could get to her home before she left with Scott, if she hadn't already. Undoubtedly, she was far gone by now. She and Scott were likely to be over the state line, maybe even at their new house. Jeff began to weep. He was overwhelmed with several emotions right now, ranging from betrayal to loneliness to pain. The pain was the severest of all, and he wished to God it would go away. Once or twice that morning, he had heard an ambulance siren go by, and imagined they would halt and jump out and pump his body full of drugs to stop the searing agony. The ambulance was never for him, unfortunately. Jeff had been so distracted by his thoughts for the past half hour that he failed to realize the sound of a car door slamming just 15 feet above his head. A thick Eastern Shore accent broke his concentration. "Give me a sec, hon. I'll be back." Jeff's eyes flashed open. "Tim, you can't do that out here. There's a station not 2 miles up the road.
a middle-aged woman's voice drawled. I said I'd only take a second, hun.
Jeff grew excited. He began to hyperventilate. Someone had stopped. They must have seen him. They were probably checking to see what it was lying in ruin at the base of the ditch, expecting an animal, but instead would see him. His rescue had finally arrived. Try as he might, though, Jeff was unable to make a sound. He had screamed so much that morning that nothing escaped his lips. Not a croak nor a groan, much less a cry for help. But this did not matter, for in seconds he would be A yellow trail of fluid came showering over the ledge of the ditch. For a quick second, Jeff was confused, but in a moment, the urine was splashing over his mangled legs. A few droplets were spewed upon his face, and he tried to spit them off. His eyes closed, and his head turned the opposite direction. He hasn't stopped to help at all, Jeff thought viciously. He only needs to urinate. That bastard. Can't he take a step further and see that I'm down here? Why doesn't he see me? Jeff tried to scream, but to no avail. The urine continued for about 20 seconds before the man zipped up his pants and returned to his vehicle with a brief mumble to his wife. Then, the car zoomed away down Route 50 onwards to Appendale. The salt from his fluid stung in every scar upon Jeff's poor, broken figure. He began to cry. He knew the man hadn't meant any harm, or to humiliate him further. But how he wanted to hate the man, how he wished he could curse him for his ignorance. If only he'd been seen. If it weren't for this impossibly deep ditch, Jeff would have been in hospital by now. He knew he didn't have too much longer to survive this hellish ordeal. He just wanted it to be over. He wanted to see Michaela just once more. If that was all he was allowed. He had so much to say to her, but feared he would never have the opportunity. A police siren whirred by, this time in the opposite direction, coming from Appendale instead of heading towards it. He didn't bother screaming for help now. If he couldn't gather attention from some dumb hick peeing on his body, how was he supposed to get it from some screeching cop car? It was then that Jeff became aware of a feeling deep inside his person. It was the first physical feeling beyond torment that he had felt in his body all day. Instantly, he knew what it was, and he tried to fight it. However, due to his condition, his muscles couldn't even begin to give up a fight, and he found himself defecating in his shredded jeans. Weeping, Jeff reflected on how he was so slowly being stripped of his humanity. Robbed of all movement, no more voice, pissed upon, and now he was unable to control his bowel movements? He had no help from anybody but himself, and even then he was powerless to do a thing. The smell was almost unbearable. He found himself breathing through his mouth and closing his nostrils, though it didn't help too much. The stench, combined with the sun's heat, made the air around him thick and hard to breathe. Flies buzzed about him, and he had to shake his head side to side to clear them from his mouth, nose, and eyes. He coughed and puked a few times, covering his personalized Varsity jacket, which he wore from time to time, in waste. Now, he began to feel the desire for water creep up throughout what was left of his body. He hadn't anything to drink in what he estimated to be around 16 hours. Looking up, he saw a few dark clouds gathering. He hoped it would rain, not only so he might have something to drink, but with enough water flooding the ditch, he might be drifted to somewhere visible from the road. He was also intensely hungry. He needed food and water if he was to keep alive long enough to be found. But how would he be able to find food here? The grass wouldn't do him any good to eat. There was a rustling of leaves coming from the trees. Jeff's head darted over so that he might see what was advancing towards him. Undoubtedly, it would be some sort of forest creature, not that they would be of any help to him. He was surprised to see a little woodland mouse scurrying through the grass. It first approached the intestine that stretched out through the grass perpendicular to him. Jeff realized that, had the intestine gone a different direction, the driver that had pissed on him might have seen it. He shook this thought off,
realizing it didn't do him any good. After it had gnawed a bit of his intestine, the mouse followed its trail to the source. Scurrying up onto his torso, the mouse examined the gaping hole in Jeff's abdomen. He prayed it would not scramble down inside of him. Fortunately, it didn't. Instead, it began to carefully inch its way up his chest. Jeff angled his head to get a better look at the little brown-orange creature. His movement sent the mouse back a few steps, but it turned and looked into Jeff's eyes and continued on its course across his chest and towards his head. Jeff knew what he had to do. If he was to survive, he was going to need nourishment. From this mouse, he would get energy and some hydration. Reluctantly, Jeff opened his mouth. His eyes were closed tightly. He did not want to see the deed done. With every step the mouse took up his torso, Jeff grimaced in disgust. Soon, its furry head and front legs had crawled audaciously into Jeff's mouth. He snapped his jaws shut with the force of a bear trap, and instantly, the coppery taste of blood filled his mouth. A muffled squeal emanated from the tiny beast. It went stiff and then ceased all movement. Jeff didn't realize it, but he was crying. He wanted to scream, but his body again betrayed him and would not allow it. He tried peevishly to eat the mouse, but the crunching of its tiny bones and its hair forbade him from doing so. He threw up, his efforts in vain. The mouse carcass fell from his mouth and rolled away from his body, out of reach of his head. Jeff passed out. He awoke some hours later, much weaker than before. Something hot and wet was stroking his face. At first, in his awoken confusion, he thought that rain had arrived at last, but saw that a deer was violently licking him. It had been attracted by the urine of the man from earlier. Jeff felt his hot breath striking his face with each exhale, its sticky saliva being slathered all over him. It began to work its way down from his face to the hole in his abdomen. He watched, worriedly, as the deer eyed the opening in his body, fully aware that there was probably salt from the urine inside of him. The deer's tongue darted into the hole and began to slap about his insides, slurping up what it could. Jeff's head began to slam against the ground repeatedly, his mouth opened wide as if to scream. Each movement the deer's tongue made was like a stab deep into his body. He thought at any moment his nerves would give out and he would die. The movement of his head caught the deer's attention and it stopped. It blankly stared at him for a few seconds and scampered off into the woods. Jeff began to pant repeatedly. He wept and prayed silently, mouthing the words, asking God to make the torture stop, that either someone would find him or that he would just die. It was then that he noticed something, a dark shadow in the sky. It was too high up near the sun for him to tell what it was. He hoped against probability that it was a traffic helicopter, though he heard no noise from it. It continued to circle and dive irregularly. It soon came close enough that Jeff was able to discern just what the flying object was. A turkey vulture swooped down from the sky gradually, obviously taking him for some kind of roadkill prey. A wave of panic rose up in Jeff. He shook his head no, as if the bird would understand what he was saying. It didn't care that he was still conscious and alive. From all appearances, he was dead. From the waist down. The vulture landed a few feet from Jeff's legs. It eyed him hungrily and began to bob its head back and forth intently, all the while rustling its wings. Jeff continued to shake his head, hoping the movement would send it off like it had done for the deer. It hopped over about 5 feet to the end of his intestine. Its razor beak pecked at his innards a bit, before seizing it and giving a solid jerk. The force of the bird's movements caused Jeff's entire body to surge over. A sharp pain rang inside his chest cavity like he was some sort of pinball machine. How he wanted to scream so desperately. He was convinced that a strong, earth-shattering scream would alleviate the torment to some degree. Instead, he was mute, and continued to feel the vulture tug at his intestines, pulling more out of his body as if he were dispensing a rope. When it grew tired of yanking at his intestine, the turkey vulture began to come close to Jeff. It was focused on the hole in his abdomen, dipping its head into the cavity. Every stab was a step closer to death for Jeff. He saw his vision splinter in half as a dark line began to tear his side apart. He was fading fast. The bird was upon him, perched atop his chest as if it were a bust of Pallas, pecking intently upon his body. Jeff no longer sought to rid himself of the bird. Perhaps this was what he had been hoping for. He felt himself slipping into unconsciousness as he could no longer breathe with the turkey vulture upon his busted ribcage. He resigned himself to this fate. The bird continued to heave and jab as he lay there, helpless. Darkness was overtaking.
"Hey, you!" A voice tore through the darkness. "Get off him, lousy buzzard!"
Jeff's eyes slowly opened. He saw a tall, handsome man in his early 30s shambling down the side of the ditch. His dark hair was shining in the late afternoon sun.
"Go on, get! Leave him alone, you bastard!"
The turkey vulture, confused, spread his wide wings and flapped itself away. The man came over and looked down at Jeff, amazed.
"My God! You're still alive?"
he marveled. Jeff smiled and nodded his head. He tried to speak up, but the man stopped him.
"Oh no, friend, you're in no place to be talking. The way you look, you probably shouldn't even be alive."
Jeff was beginning to get irked.
Why wasn't this stranger calling for assistance? Surely, he had a phone. "I didn't expect you to be conscious when I came back. Much less alive,"
he chuckled. Now, Jeff was growing uneasy. What did the man mean by saying, "when I came back"? Jeff Callister, right? Jeff nodded, amazed that this stranger, whom he had never met before in his life, knew his name. "Pleasure to meet you in person. Name's Scott McGinnis. We belong to a mutual appreciation party, I do believe."
"Scott." The name flashed like an explosion through Jeff's head. "Boy, you know, coming back here, I expected you to be long dead. I didn't think after the way I hit you last night that you could have even lived through the night, much less almost a full day. You are taking it like a champ, sir."
Scott seized his shattered hand and gave the broken arm a firm shake. Jeff grimaced, screaming intensely without any sound emanating from his lips.
"Oh, forgive me, Jeff. I didn't think you had any feeling left in your body."
They stared each other in the eye for an expanse of time. Tears streamed down Jeff's discolored face, wiping away dried mouse blood. "You're wondering why and how, aren't you? I've known for quite a while now about you two. Mac and I tell each other everything eventually. There's no secrets between us. So, last night while coming home to pick her up, I couldn't believe my eyes. There you were, running down the street,
headed towards our house determinedly.
I recognize you. Oh sure, who could mistake it for someone else with that varsity jacket of yours with the name plastered across the back of your shoulders? G. Callister? Had to be you. Well, I let my nerves get the best of me. See, I love Michaela. I love her a lot, as a husband should. But part of me thought I would actually lose her to you. Do you know that? I couldn't risk you getting to her before we had time to leave. So I just jerked my wheel a bit to the right, and off you went.
Soaring into this ditch.
Hell, it was really a sight. You should have seen it.
Scott stood. His domineering shadow blotted the sun from Jeff's view.
Now, although I said Michaela and I don't have secrets, I don't see any harm in keeping this one between us. Don't you agree?
He smirked, and Jeff's motionless, silent body, incapable of any response.
Good! I knew you'd understand.
Jeff's mind was racing. He was unsure of what to do, what to say. There was not much he could do, except continue to cry. He was powerless to do anything. Here he was, inches from the man that had robbed him of his life, unable to lift a finger against him.
Well, I really should be going, Jeff. I thought by coming back here and seeing you dead, I could put my worries to rest. I can see now that all I need is to give you a little more time. That's all.
Scott began to ascend the wall of the ditch. He disappeared over the ledge and walked to his car. Jeff could hear him mutter, "Just a little more time in the ditch."
Well, what did you think? This story caught my eye whilst I was looking through some of the creepypastas online, and my jaw dropped when I read it. The author, Samuel Pomerantz, has great pacing, excellent descriptions, and believable characters in a world that is both cruel yet realistic. Hats off to you, mate. If you enjoyed this story, let me know. If you didn't, let me know. Also, for those of you on iTunes or other platforms, I appreciate every review that I get, and I've been asked how to rate my channel on iTunes. Trust me, you are not alone. It can be a couple of hoops. But I'll make it as clear as I can. You can search me on iTunes, so Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales, click my profile image, and then leave a rating that way where it says rating and review. Or alternatively, hop on the SoundCloud and click Leave iTunes Review button. That helps immensely. And lastly, if you are with me this far and you haven't skipped, thanks. If you have 2 seconds, a like goes a long way, and a YouTube sub helps me a lot too. And I'm really happy for any support you can give this channel. It just means more stories for more people. That's as easy as that, really. And thank you again for listening. More stories tomorrow, so visit me then. Okay, telltellers and fans of the creepy, this is the place where stories live, and you telltellers come to listen. Enjoy your day or night, and join me every weekday for our creepy tradition. And as always, till next time.